The evening on which we sit is Rosh Chodesh Teves, which means that this is the month of the Yahrzeit of the Rambam. I do think you recall that last year on Rosh Chodesh Teves I showed you Rav Kook's one essay on his opinion of the Rambam, which was a lengthy conversation in which he disagreed with the famous 20th century Jewish historian, the early part of the 20th century, and that's from Zev Yavitz, who's a frum Talmud Chacham, the only one whom you would call a historian and frum at the same time. We don't have such things. And the essay was included in the back of the 12th volume of Yavitz's work. Essentially, Yavitz believed that the Rambam was a somewhat of a split personality. You recall, he could not understand how the Rambam, being such a thorough halachic master, could fall for the shallowness of Aristotelian thought. And as far as the Yavitz was concerned, there was only one way to treat the Rambam, and that's Palginon Dibura. Split him in half, look at him for the half or the segment that was the true halachic master, and his magnum opus was the Yad HaChazaka, his halachic work. And as far as Moreh Nevuchim is concerned, you know, that book of philosophy, that's where he was perplexed himself. Let's leave it be. Rav Kook could not stand this, as you recall, and said in no uncertain terms that when you look at the Rambam, whom he claims to be one of the two pillars of Jewish survival, of Torah survival, such a personality is a totally unified and integrated personality. As far as he was concerned, there were two railroad tracks. One was the Rambam, his philosophical bent, and the other one was the Ramban with a mystical bent. Philosophy meaning rational, intellectual, cognitive knowledge, and mysticism, the inner feelings and the inner workings of the psyche of a human being. And these two people, the Rambam first and the Ramban secondly, respectively propagated these two approaches, the Rambam being the intellectual. Not that the Ramban was any less intellectual, but he already popularized Kabbalah, better said, he already took and put an overlay, a veneer of Kabbalah onto everything, and indicated that without that inner mystical feeling, you cannot know Torah whatsoever. Rav Kook openly writes that these are the two railroad tracks. You cannot dispense with either. And if they are so essential, the Rambam, you can't dispense of part of the Rambam. You must take him in toto. There's no such thing as differentiating one piece of Rambam written in halacha from another piece of Rambam written in philosophy. Now, needless to say, Klal Yisrael argued that point for hundreds of years, and it cost us lives, and the whole, you know, well, there's no question about it. Joel says it still do. In case you doubt this, by the way, if you allow me just a personal note, Adina, for the sake of posterity, if anyone outside of the community hears these tapes, Adina is my one and only daughter. At this point in Tovshin Memches, 1987-88, is an 11th grader in school. They are learning about the Rambam in Jewish history. And the teacher, who happens to be a very profound and brilliant woman, set up a historical debate. And the topic of the debate was, is it proper to learn philosophy if you are a Ben Torah? Can you learn Torah and philosophy at the same time? And needless to say, when it comes to a debate, there's got to be a pro and a con. Adina was assigned, she accepted the positive, the pro, rather than the con. And by the way, both sides, all of whom were students of mine last year in Historia, we just hadn't reached that period last year, all came to me for sources. So I gave them all the sources. I gave them a mountain of such sources, and I learned with Adina this issue as stated by Rav Kook. The debate was taped and was repeated by other students in other segments, other divisions of the class, other sectors of the class. And the tapes were listened to by Talmidei Chachamim, Kolel people, in Lakewood. Husbands of the various wives who teach by us. And one of the most telltaling reactions was when they heard the pro, in other words, Rav Kook, the reaction was, I can shlug up, I can answer every single one of those assertions. You see.
Refute.
Right. I can shlug up. I can refute everyone. Sure, you can refute everyone. There's no problem. Now, this is motivating me to come back to this 2 years in a row. There is a second essay that Rav Kook wrote, probably no different than the first, save for the style of things. But when you say, and you remind us, that this is as much a division of opinion today as it was in the century after the Rambam, then you know a personality such as myself says there's got to be a deeper thing over there. And the deeper thing happens to be, there's no question in my mind, it's supported by scientific scholarship. And as, whether you accept it or not, you hear it from me over and again, there is a psychological concomitant to this whole thing. There are certain people, because of certain psychological construct, cannot accept the fact that we blend what is so-called a foreign philosophy in the name of truth with Torah. Well, Rav Kook got into troubles by doing that also when he wrote that if there is such a thing as Kodesh and Chol, that which is holy and that which is secular, then the Kodesh is built on the bedrock foundation of Chol. Out of Chol there must grow a total binyan, a total structure in life called Kodesh. Well, that's why they're burning his books. That's why they can't stand to hear this. What are you talking about? Kodesh has got to be Kodesh all the way through. You refute it. How can you build a building that's going to be Kodesh if it's on a bedrock of Chol? It's impossible. The foundation is what you need. And if the building has to be Kodesh, then the foundation all the more has to be Kodesh. It's got to be Kodesh, Kodesh. Well, this is, in a sense, sophistry. It may be rational, but it's certainly not logical to say such a thing, and unless and until you hear, you know, what the concepts are of Kodesh and Chol. You see, and what's more, that, you know, to say that we don't accept that philosophy, and this is what is more critical, that we don't accept that philosophy today, somehow tries to say that we are more sophisticated than let's say Rav Kook was 50 years ago or 70 years ago when he wrote this, and more sophisticated than his door for whom he wrote it, which is an absurdity. It's a total absurdity. In other words, that in the yeshivas today we know better than the yeshivas of 70 years ago in these inyanim because we're far more sophisticated. I don't know that we know better. We may have a clearer thing, a clearer pattern in what we know, but I don't know that we know it better. And this is what's basically motivating me, and therefore this long introduction, to look at Rav Kook's second essay on the Rambam, which we did not do last time, and hopefully your forgetfulness shall have set in so that it is not so terribly repetitive, although you know that I have reinforced this notion in your mind. But I'm going to take it a step further. After we look at Rav Kook and what he says on the Rambam, I'm going to show you someone else who no one in the yeshiva world has any problems with. I may have mentioned him once or even within the context of our original conversation, and that is Rabbi Yosef Rosen, who is the Rogachev Gaon. Rabbi Yosef Rosen, the Rogachev Gaon, was the Vilna Gaon of our century, and I use that advisedly. He was the Vilna Gaon of our century, who lived in the city of Dvinsk in Lithuania, Russia, and died in 1936. He was this century's Vilna Gaon. Anyone who studies his works realizes that the man mastered all there is to ever know about Torah. And that's it. I'm going to show you his opinion, albeit from a backhand swing, of the Rambam and especially the Moreh Nevuchim. But before I begin with that, I will then have to stop and give you a short vignette about the man, or the name, actually, Rabbi Yosef Rosen. And I do this only because we sit in the city of Passaic. If we were anywhere else, in Bergen County, 10 miles away from here, it would have absolutely no meaning whatsoever. Another vignette, which was told to me by the elders of the city, and it is not apocryphal, it is entirely true. But let's pick this up. Let's start with the Rambam. And maybe we ought to start in the middle, the second segment, which is on page 115, line 91, where you have the bet over there. This appeared as a long essay in a paper called Haaretz in the year 5695. Now, we are where today? We are 48. So this is 53 years ago is when he wrote this. The Haaretz, that is that secularist bastion of anti-religious hate. But they were tzaddikim probably in those days, you understand? The Haaretz, you understand? That anyone today who lives in Me'er Sha'arim wouldn't wrap a herring in, that they shouldn't suspect him of having read the headlines, you see. So you don't even wrap your herring in it. You see. That's it. Rav Kook, but seriously, within the context of this setting, Rav Kook wrote in all of these journals.
In the Rav Kook's selection of letters, that new Sefer?
Yeah, Feldman's translation, is that his name?
There is one letter that I recall where he submitted a letter to a newspaper where he said he's not writing for them anymore because they had gone on an anti-religious campaign. And the letter, his resignation letter, is in that collection of books.
100%. I come to you in the battle of ideas, especially the in view of what I just told you about the Kodesh and the Chol. He insisted that Kodesh be built on Chol. You see. What's more, he goes so far as saying that if there is such a thing as a secular Jew in this generation, you should know, Bruce Bublik, that it was the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's design that there be secular Jews so that you can come with your Kedusha and you can cooperate with them, because you know what happens when you go ahead and cooperate with the Chilonim, the secularists, to build the nation. You know what happens? Everything becomes Kadosh. What happens when you walk through a perfume factory? What happens when you just had a fire? Erev Shabbos, on our way home, we stopped off at someone's factory that had a fire and half of it was demolished. My daughter and I, Adina and I, walked in just to see what was doing. We were there for less than 5 minutes. We walked out and we were all smoked herrings.
What, today? Uh-huh.
No, last Friday. Okay?
You were involved.
No, we didn't touch a thing. Standing in the atmosphere of that smoke-infested place, and the fire had been 36 hours before, you see. You have to absorb the fragrance. Now, you take a Chiloni and you put him side by side with a Dati, What has to happen, says Rav Kook? It was the Ribbono Shel Olam's design that together, hand in hand, let's call it negative and positive, that together they'll make very brilliant light.
Let's see, to me, and I don't know if you want to leave this on the tape, but to me what's even more fascinating is that Rav Kook feels that the Chilinim can do things that the Dati'im couldn't do because of what happened to the Dati culture.
100%. Here's a man who knows Rav Kook. I wasn't going to go... we ought to learn that chedek over there. The kochos, the pluses, the positive aspects of what Chiloni Judaism, secular Judaism, developed was a kind of an administrative ability, a spectrum, to be able to see the international, to be able to see beyond the tip of your nose, you see. Well, you know in my cynical moments how I have recast that very lofty ideal. Tell me, who's going to be the Minister of Defense? Which Rosh Hashiva? Rosh Hashiva of Chaim Berlin? Torah V'Das? Okay? Sochachov? Gemunkachi Yeshiva? Who's going to be the Minister of Finance? No, remember, Mashiach is coming and we're all going to be frum, and only the frumas are going to take over. Okay? And the Medina is going to exist, so now the frum are going to get in because Mashiach is here. Who is Mashiach going to appoint? Which Rosh Yeshiva is the Mashiach going to appoint to be the Minister of Interior? He's not frum. He's wearing a kipasu guy. He's wearing a knitted yarmulke. That's not frum.
But go back to
basics.
Sarah
Prim is a Rav Peretz. Who? He's not a chosid. He's a misnaged. Who? You hear what I'm saying? It's comical cynicism. And what he's saying, what Joel's saying, is right. This notion that Rav Kook put on paper and believed it, belay v'nefesh, that this is not a compromise. When you compromise, you got to give something up. This is not a compromise. This is a divine design that these two forces should be able to come together and rub shoulders with one another, because there's what to learn from the Chilonim and the Federation. They know how to do things. They know how to raise money. They know how to get things done. They know a chitzoniut, a certain veneer, that has to be for something dignified, that we schleppers in Bobov on 50th Street in Borough Park, we don't know from that. We only know from the filthy, smelly towel that's hanging on a roll, and everyone goes and dries their hands on it. Can't build a Medina that way. You were saying?
Well, first of all, the lack of worldly knowledge is not a necessary concomitant to being observant.
I hear what you're saying.
And let's start at the beginning. Moshe Rabbeinu was the general. Yehoshua, David HaMelech, knew something about politics.
Yehuda Maccabi.
I mean, I don't know, but I'm picking people who are learned.
He wasn't learned.
And the
Abarbanel.
The Abarbanel.
I hear what you're saying.
We have a tradition.
You missed one small point. When we learn it.
Ezra Nehemiah.
I hear what you're saying. When we learn it, and you're now forcing the issue, he specifically states that if anything happens in this world, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam's doing. Why in this door does he allow for the Tchiyat HaUmah, for the renaissance of our nation, to be through Chilonim and Datiyim together? In other words, there's a purpose there, and any purpose of the Ribbono Shel Olam is a positive, focused, and directed purpose. It isn't just happenstance. Nebuch, this is the way, this is Golus. You see. Now, if that's the case, then this is no different than going ahead and choosing a David HaMelech, or going ahead and appointing and anointing a Yehoshua or a Moshe Rabbeinu or an Ezra or a Nehemiah. This is with the same forethought and intent that the Ribbono Shel Olam had with all those other Doros that you just quoted, albeit different. Shteis. Now that's where Rav Kook waxes.
But isn't that true, though, that the men, he's got the bchira, he's got a choice if he wants to be frum or not to be frum. I mean, he went up. Ribbono Shel Olam makes the yid the zanish kecharoni.
Fine.
He doesn't make the yid should be a chaloni.
Fine.
A secular. The Sefer HaRit himself, he is the one, he has the choice to become Fum or
good.
Otherwise.
Good. That's
so maybe the reason that those Chilonim are Chilonim is not because Rebbeinu Shlom want them to be Chilonim, because they had the choice and they choose to be Chilonim.
Yeah, that's granted. I never said any differently.
No, but
what Rav Kook is questioning, granted that they are Chilonim, granted that they have little or no value for the mitzvah aspect of the Torah, for the V'hayoki Savol El Ha'aretz. Okay? All the mitzvahs are Tluyos V'aretz. Granted that they have other things which attract them as being more beautiful than Jewish culture and Jewish civilization, if you'll pardon my language over there. You understand? In other words, Torah mitzvahs, so we'll say, what's motivating them? Specifically, Herzl and all those other chevra. What's motivating them to lay their lives down to build an Eretz Yisrael? They could have.
That's a big mitzvah.
No, but that's his.
The mitzvah itself.
So that's what? So what he's saying?
Was saying in a way, he was saying the fact that they are laying their lives out in the way, even though they are secular, they're chilonim, but the fact that they lay their life out there and they give their life away for Eretz HaKadosh,
for your family and mine.
Right. This is by itself. This by itself. It's not necessarily you don't have to be. In other words, you don't have to be. By doing this is by
itself. The that are guarding the kibbutzim.
All the things that we have been saying over here, but we're going to have to refine it. We're going to have to refine it as the divine desire.
Where does it say that a person that lives in Eretz Yisrael is the kino kiyem is kolakot erot?
Ksuvos. Yeah, ksuvos stuff. Kufiyut aleph.
What's the statement?
The statement says,
Kol ador be'eretz Yisrael is mochalim lo kol avonoso. Kol ador be'eretz Yisrael afilu bi'ir she'kula nochri is ki yesh lo eloah. That's a from Jew. Kol ador be'chutz la'aretz, and if you live in a Gan Eden called the Garden State,
you hear that?
Right? Chutz la'aretz afilu bi'ir she'rubo, even in a city where most are Jews, in other words, our Gan Eden is Kimishain Loiloka. Kilo Ovid Avodazara, according to one thing. Bunch of idol worshippers.
This even though there is Yeshiva and a Kodel, right?
What do you mean even though? What do you mean even though? Maybe because there is, that's what the Gemara is saying. If you think that you can build a Gan Eden outside of that one little Nikuda, that one little spot on the map, then you're crazy. Yeah, absolutely crazy. But we got off the Rambam. Let's get back. All right.
Something else that was interesting to me about. All right,
say it. But we will learn it now. You know, you.
Chilonim and
you talk and.
The combination of Chilonim and Dathim. Mm-hmm. Something that's interesting to me is that it seems like we all has real roots in like Chassidut. I mean, you see people like the Talmud Yaakov Yosef talk about the rich people and the students and how they're supposed to come together to form the two sides of a coin.
Well, we'll have to really investigate, as we did. Just let me finish with this vignette and then get to our subject. You remember one sheer months and months ago, surely before last summer. Okay, I agree. I Taki agree. It's time for your father to go and change your position. That's it. You remember we spoke about a kibbutznik from Shomer HaTzair coming and talking to Rav Kook and saying, well, I am lo dati, I am not religious, so therefore I don't have to do X, Y, and Z. And he took his hand, he shook his hand, remember? And he said, Atalo dati, you're not religious? And kept on saying it over and over.
He repeated it over and over.
And it was a young Hebraman, and that was it. That was the end of the conversation. Decades later, the man writes to Rav Neria, who was his Talmud Muvak, right? He says, I feel that handshake till today. And when Rav Kook shook hands, he clasped with both hands. You know, he had you. He says, till today I feel that hand clasp. And it changed my life.
What happened to that student?
Who? I would have to do more research. But one thing is for sure, when he spoke, he was well into his senior, into his golden age, 60, 70, whatever. He says, till today I feel it. ata lo dati. Then there was a variation of that.
Did that change his life?
Oh, unquestionably, that was the point of the miser.
Certainly, he became a firm.
You're pushing me. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
You're missing the point of the story.
That's all.
It was before.
Okay.
Explain to a.
No, it's not a thickhead. Sure. Then in the same night, I remember telling you of another miser, which was written, that someone made a statement here, that, you know, ani lo dati. And he said, Rega, hiskamnu, we agreed that at this meeting, and they were sitting around the table, rak nidaber emet, only the truth will be spoken. You weren't talking the truth. He backed off. What are you talking about, ata lo dati? I hate to do this to you, and I will draw on, hopefully, my credit account with you. Today is Rosh Chodesh Teves. I had to be in the city in the afternoon. I was fortunate to be able to rearrange my doctor's appointment that I missed in the morning, because I overslept in the afternoon.
Sorry, because of my fault.
It wasn't your fault at all, okay? It wasn't your fault. He's my witness, because Thursday night I was... When was I in your house?
Sunday.
Sunday, long before your fault, I fell asleep sitting and waiting for him 2 minutes. I fell asleep in a chair. So.
Well, you want to sleep one
time? No, come on. Me. This tape... Yeah, fine. All right. But I walked in to photocopy this on Lexington Avenue. There is a photocopy place. Doctor's office, the medical center, Columbia Medical Center, was on Madison Avenue in the 60s. And I went up to photocopy this. I had some time. And I photocopied it and put it together. Next door was a stationery store and an art supply. And I wanted a certain vinyl cover with the pockets, a folder with the pockets that I use for school. And I walk in. I happen to have been holding the safer that I photocopied this from in my hand. And the man is a senior citizen, bald, trim, doesn't necessarily look Jewish, and if I would have to peg him for his ethnicity, I'd say he's probably an old-time German-Dutch family, you know, something like that. And I ask him for what I want. I want a vinyl cover, a vinyl folder with pockets, a vinyl file with pockets, but it should be made out of vinyl. And he goes over to the section and starts to look. And he says, no, it's not this. And he goes on to the next shelf. It's not this. Weiß ich was. I don't have any. Now, whether you understand the words in Yiddish, weiß ich was, so, you know, what it technically means, what's going on here. I don't know whether he saw the print on the front cover of the book or not. It's irrelevant. I was holding a Wall Street Journal also, so. But it could be that he sensed that there was a Jew standing in front of it. I don't know why I got so shaken that I said to him, you don't have to be so apologetic. Es wird nicht sterben zum Schiddach. Now that could have meant several things. It won't cancel the shidduch. You know, it won't disrupt our relationship now that in two words you have fused with me. You see. And he says, no, but I have to have it. Now that's all we spoke. And I walked out. I tell you that I walked out with tears in my eyes. What for? So you say, you know, I'm a sickie, I'm a sentimentalist, or whatever. Because of having read through this part of the Kodesh and Chol, which appears in that same volume, the notion that when someone like me on Lexington Avenue, the Upper East Side, you know, fancy schmancy, walks in, dressed like a Wall Street banker, save for a look on the face. You know? I was not dressed with my black hat today, or my Shabbos clothes. And it evokes in that human being a certain identification. that that was the true kiyum, the true essence of what Hafkuk was talking about, the fusing of the two. Then the pièce de résistance was, I crossed the street, again teary-eyed, and I needed a key. I had to make, we started with Adina, so I'll have to fit Adina before we get to the text. I need a key to my car for Adina, because she's driving my car already. I wanted to have her own key, not take my own. So I walk in, and I see the boss of the locksmith talking to his worker, Be'ivrit. Okay? And I say to him, Ta'aseli tova, Ta'aseli shnayim mizeh, shnayim mizeh, echad mizeh, migamanu. And we conversed in Ivrit. Two pushtakim, two good for nothings, certainly without yarmulkes. I'm not allowed to suspect anyone, but it's no suspicion. It's film they didn't put on. It's not a suspicion. And here we are, we're talking together, two hearts fused together. And in each case, I ended with, you know, Chag Sameach, and the reply was either Afreilich and Chanukah in Yiddish or Chag Sameach. You see. Now that's today. I couldn't have told it to you if it wasn't today. And just after I had flipped through your digression over here, which needs a whole discussion unto itself. Can we get to the Rambam now that you spoke about some important things? All right, what can I tell you? On line 91. Just to characterize the Rambam. Ki yitzira agadit. עומדת לפנינו התמונה המרהיבה כפולת האורה הזאת של פאר גאוני עולם זה הרמב״ם זיכרונו לברכה. Incredibly beautiful sentence. The Rambam emerges as יצירה אגדית, like a legendary figure. Now with a legendary figure, you don't need stark reality. It's you know, it's almost cosmetically perfect, you see. An actor or an actress has legendary beauty because the cosmetics takes care of all the blemishes. If the Rambam were to be anything of a perfect figure, hatmuna hamarhiva kfulata, or this double beam of light, and the double beam of light meaning Torah and MS, philosophy, secular learning, he emerges as pe'er ge'onei olam, as the beauty, the ultimate beauty of the Geonim, of the intellectual Geonim of this world, meaning the Rambam. Those who criticize him, quote, mevakrim, are those who will criticize him, azay nefesh hayu, and they had guts. Hayu bevadai rotzim lahafoch be'emet et ha'ishiyut ha'mutzeket hazot litmuna agadit. Those who criticized him didn't want to make this totally mutzeket, unified personality. And the word mutzeket comes from the way the menorah was made. The menorah was not made shtikalach, pieces, pieces. It was one yetzirah, one total unified yetzirah. That was the requirement, that the menorah could not be put together pieces, pieces. It had to be one solid chunk of gold. It's totally unified, no subdivisions and no categories, because once you divide and subdivide, then you have all kinds of degeneration that can set in. It was totally miksha. Miksha.
What do you call this? What you were talking about last night, that the machine does it.
Injection molding.
Molding.
Yeah. Molding. It had to be molded. That's right. Molded. But molded out of one chunk of gold, and never to be fragmented or separated. So this personality, of this totally unified personality, those who criticized him wanted to turn him into Tmuna Agadit, into a legendary figure. Now with a legendary figure, you can make up any kind of story you want. But you know what? It's only a story. It's not real. This is what they wanted to do. Asherat b'dimyon ha-mufraz yachol lihiyot la makom ולא במציאות הרגילה בהגבלתה. Just in your wild imagination can you dream up of a Rambam to be able to write a Mor Nevuchim and a Yad HaChazaka, and at the same time it's not part of reality. כי כיצד יכול המוח הרגיל לחשוב? How can the mind conceive of the fact שאותו הגאון התלמודי, that master of Talmud, אשר יצר את פירוש המשנה הנפלא, who went ahead and created such an unbelievable parish on the Mishnah, and also at Sefer HaMitzvot, his listing in Sefer HaMitzvot, and especially his 14-chapter introduction of how he figures out which is a mitzvah taseh and which is not, ואת היד החזקה, and also his magnum opus, the Mishnah Torah, עם כל מלוא מרחבו, which has such a breadth of scholarship and such exacting works, detail, who otola philosoph aniskav, that halachic master is still that sublime philosopher hamitomein la otah hachlala v'avshata ha'elyona hamitgalel lanu b'morer hanubuchim, who goes ahead and rises to hachlala. This is a philosophical term of inclusion. The hafshata comes from the word, it's the same root as pshat, but it means defining your terms. Alright? And that's going to be important for us a little later. That is seen in Mor Nevuchim. And if you haven't looked at a Mor Nevuchim ever or lately, you've got to take a look at it. The whole first part of the Mor Nevuchim does only one thing. He takes words and asks you, what do these words mean? For instance, I brought a Mor Nevuchim. What does the word Tzelem mean? We talk about Tzelem Elokim. What does it mean? Tmuna, picture. What does that mean in philosophical terms? Yalad means to give birth. What is the essence, the philosophical essence of Yalad? Yashav, sit. Kum, get up. Amad, stand. Adam. This is his whole first segment is a philosophical definition of terminologies, and that's hafshata. That's defining what we are talking about. It's not bilbul. Absolutely not. And it's on that basis that he writes his Mor Nevuchim, and this carries through not only in the first part, but he has in the second and third part also. To be able to understand this. It's impossible to conceive of a fact that this Rambam was the same Rambam who wrote the Halacha in Mor Nevuchim. Well, you know that this is the severest criticism that in our day and generation, that a certain man who is a Rosh Yeshiva, unquestionably a Rosh Yeshiva, has sustained, because they can't imagine that Rabbi Soloveitchik can be the Isha Halacha and talk the Torah of his grandfather, the Brisker Rav, Reb Chaim Brisker, at the same time talk Kant and Plato and Aristotle and every modern philosopher and every modern scientist. It's too mind-boggling. And not only talk, but that they should fit together like a hand in a custom-made glove. How's the issue? That one is in the service of the other, so that there is a unified whole. And this is his severest critics cannot understand this. But not to worry, people. When he said all of his Yahrzeit Shiurim, even if you wore a Shtreimel and a Bekeshah with Chassidish and Peyitz, you came also and you sat and you listened.
He doesn't
say that anymore. No, he can't. Ashrei Shezachisi, I mean, 25 years, I missed almost none of them. I heard it. At the Yahrzeit Shir, which is around this time.
Were they taped?
Oh, sure. Taped and in later years video.
Are they going to be published one day?
Well, Shitas Brisk is to publish posthumously. Reb Chaim on the Rambam was published by his children years after his death. And Rabbi Soloveitchik has stuck to that, with small exceptions. The pressures were just too great. Mm-hmm. So he published five major essays, And today, Halachic Mind is another essay. But, though he wrote many years ago, Halachic Mind, I think he wrote in the 1940s, if I'm not mistaken. So there are major essays now, but the overwhelming majority of his work has not been published. They say that they're working on it. They're working on it. That's Shitas Brisk. Nothing is lost. Thank God, nothing is lost. Everything is taped and recorded and videotaped also. You have no idea what kind of an experience it is to have been in the presence of that man when you saw this total unity. I remember in my days when we begged him to talk in Yiddish. Because his English was too hard. It was just too difficult for us. We didn't, and mind you, we're not seventh graders. We have already graduated college. Talking to Smicha Shiur. When he was talking Yaradea, we begged him to talk in Yiddish, so that we could understand him.
Did he switch to Yiddish?
Yeah, sometimes he did, and other times he looked at us and, you know, as if to say, go get yourself a dictionary and learn the language. Right? I have to do it. You can do it also. And it's not only that. He does. The Hebrew that he writes, he has no ghostwriters. He never did. Whether it is Ivrit, or Yiddish, or German, in which he wrote his doctoral dissertation, or English, he is the one who did it himself. Let's see. But let's go back to the Rambam. On line 98, v'huhu oto gadol harifua. And not only is he the philosopher, not only is he the halachic scholar, he is this great medical personality. Sherishmo aya kol kach nikar, that his influence was so evident bizmano at that time, bein abirei harofiim, among the biggest of doctors, that, you know, you knew who the Rambam was as a medical man. V'she'otot gidulato shkidato gam b'mikzoa zeh nisharu l'dorot. And that an impression of his greatness and his dedication to medicine, gam b'mikzoa zeh, in this field, not only in halacha, not only in philosophy, nisharu l'dorot, were known for generations afterwards. Kitumuna kazot, a personality like this, ha'mofia lefaneim lo biprakim shonim, murkavim u'mechubarim, ela bishleimut achdutit. Such a personality that appears from time to time is only a personality that is totally achdutit, is totally unified. There's no way, like Yavitz, the historian, said, that you're going to write with one personality Greek philosophy and another personality halacha, and yet another personality you'll be the doctor. There's no such thing. You cannot separate. You cannot make a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde out of him. Heicha nifgoshna gam bein roma shterot shel gidolei hadorot. Where are we going to find in the Gedolei HaDorot, in the greats of all generations, such a blend and such a personality? Now,
what's that word, Levakrim? What does it mean?
Levakrim are criticizers. Levaker means
to visit.
Yeah, it means to visit. Now, when you visit, you come into close contact with. You see how someone is doing.
Yeah.
Okay, and Mevaker is a critic. Is a critic. You must know, you must understand, because of your intimacy with whatever you are criticizing, you've got to get under the skin of it.
Okay,
but notice how it's printed here and how he wrote it originally, so-called critics, with the proverbial quotation marks, so-called critics. Alright? Maybe we ought to, since in that paragraph his position is clear, and the rest of the essay, he simply expands upon the uniqueness of the way of the personality of the way the Rambam goes ahead and develops his entire philosophy, and as is a reflection of his personality. maybe we ought to take a quick break from this, although we can come back to it. Let me show you about the rugged shoulder that we spoke of. Now, as we sit in Passaic, I tell you that the man's name, the Rogachev's name, he was born in 1858, I believe, and died, as I told you, in 1936 in Vienna. So he was not a victim of the Holocaust. His works, however, could have been destroyed forever were it not for a student of his having sensed the Holocaust coming, photographing his manuscripts and secretly mailing it to people in the United States when the routes were open. All of the film were put together in a shoebox or something of the sorts, and just they laid around. Whereupon...
The people receiving it didn't know what they were getting?
Well, it was family. They didn't know the extent to which they had a treasure in their hand. And this was showed ultimately in the 1950s to Rabbi Menachem Mendel Kasher, who is the famous Kasher of Torah Shlema. And he immediately identified what it was all about, and he, together with Yeshiva University, established a joint foundation to edit all of these works, and quite a few of them have been published. Kasher is no longer alive, so the project is kind of dead. There's still much more to go. Not to my knowledge. But the entire Perush on Chumash, Chamisha Chumash Torah, has been done. He wrote a Perush on the Rambam, the Yad HaChazokah, and that we have. And there are quite a few others still, but there's much more.
Is that Polish?
Oh, yeah. Because what? The Chamisha Chumash Torah?
No, the Yad HaChazokah.
On the Yad HaChazokah, yes. It's a reprint. That was published in Europe already. And it's nothing. And then published in the four or five different segments, and it's been taken together, gathered together, and put into two volumes printed in Eretz Yisrael. But let me tell you about the name. His name was Rabbi Yosef Rosen. In the town of Passaic, they needed a rabbi.